Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org under Public Affairs and on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. Today is September 17th, 2025. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing at up a tiny bit at 46,018, the NASDAQ down a little bit at 22,261, and the S&P pretty flat at 6,600. Our topic tonight is the elements of financial planning. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and they'll bring it in. You can also submit questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight I am talking about the elements of financial planning. It's actually my favorite thing to talk about. I don't know if it's my favorite, because I do love talking about taxes too, but I do really, really love the field of financial planning. In fact, I had always wanted to be a teacher. I'm going to digress for a moment. I always wanted to be a teacher. There were no teaching jobs. It's like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I decided to become an accounting major because I figured I could get a job in accounting. And then when I went into accounting, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm going to like this. It seemed quite boring to me. I'm a people person and I didn't know what I was going to do. I had worked retail, so I kind of flip-flopped between accounting and retail after college. Then I worked at a law firm for 9 years doing estate and trust, and I absolutely loved that. It was just, a wonderful learning environment. And then I landed at Valley National Financial Advisors 25 years ago. We are celebrating our 40th year anniversary this year. But when I landed there, and now I've been there 25 years, it was because it brought everything together that I love. The people, thinking, problem solving, and it was this part in particular, the financial planning part of the, helping people, that I thought was just so incredible. I think it can just make such a difference. And so I think I talked about this, as I said, back in December of 21, if I didn't already say that. And I wanted to revisit it again, because I did notice that it seems to be a very, very important, I feel, in people's financial decisions, that you understand how the elements of your financial life and your financial planning all work together. But before I start talking about that, I do also love to mention the CFP board standards, the Certified Financial Planner board standards. They've done an incredible job, in my opinion, of kind of bringing the profession to the forefront and the importance of it. And they, I want to highlight some of the standards that CFP professionals must abide by. So the CFP board has a code of ethics and standards, which are to benefit and protect the public. I'm reading from you know, some of their literature, provide standards for delivering financial planning and advanced financial planning as a distinct and valuable profession. Compliance with the code and standards is a requirement of CFP certification. The code of ethics delineates principles that guide behavior, which include acting with honesty, integrity, confidence, diligence, and to have certain duties to clients, including acting in their best interest. That's what we call a fiduciary responsibility. The standards of conduct include a fiduciary duty to the client when giving financial advice or performing financial planning, as well as disclosures of fees and conflicts of interest, among other duties. The practice standards include the steps in the financial planning process as well, which include, and here's where it's kind of all going to come together, which include, one, understanding the client's personal and financial circumstances. This goes to your fingerprint, people. This is where I always say your thumbprint is unique. Your financial situation is so unique to you. It's always great to get advice, you know, talking to your friends and family, and maybe there's someone that you've really admired on how they've managed their financial, you know, decisions, but your situation is unique to you. So a CFP professional needs to make sure that they understand the client's personal and financial circumstances, identifying and selecting goals, analyzing the client's current course of action and potential alternative courses of action, developing the financial planning recommendations, presenting the financial planning recommendations, implementing the financial planning recommendations, and monitoring progress and updating. Now, you may not always prepare a full financial plan. It depends on, you know, what the engagement is. But if you're doing a financial plan, that's the guidelines. In determining if you need financial planning, one of the points the CFP board would consider is if the financial advice needed requires integration of relevant elements of the client's personal and or financial circumstances in order to act in the client's best interest, taking into account a number of factors which could affect the client's financial position. And why am I saying all this? Because it demonstrates the importance and significance of what true financial planning is and the seriousness of how it applies to individuals. And I've recently seen a common theme. And whenever I start seeing a common theme, I feel like it's my message from the universe that I need to share it. And the common theme is, you can't look at financial planning in a vacuum. And that's what I have been hearing from clients, and even what I have been seeing sometimes in practice, is that when you're doing financial planning, and we talk about the elements of financial planning, which I'll go ahead and say now, cash flow, taxes, income taxes, estate taxes, retirement, risk management, which is insurance, investment management, and estate planning. So there's six elements: cash flow, taxes, retirement, risk management, investment management, and estate planning. When you look at those six elements, you may go to an accountant for your tax return. You may go to an attorney for your estate planning. You may go to your insurance agent for insurance. You might go to your 401k provider for, you know, retirement questions. Who did I miss? Estate attorney, your broker, your financial advisor who might just be doing your investments. So you might be going to these various individuals, and they may be looking at just that, you know, that element. So if you go and get your tax return done somewhere and you give them the information and they're inputting it into your tax return, they're not necessarily doing tax planning. Not all CPAs or accountants are doing tax planning when they're entering the information. First of all, a lot of people don't want a big bill for their tax return, and therefore they want to limit the amount of time that a CPA may be working on the return. So that CPA may not take the time to plan because it's going to cost you more for that tax return unless they see something really obvious. So that CPA or accountant or enrolled agent, whoever it might be, will just be looking at that one element and not how your other decisions are impacting your taxes. We're already at our first break. I'm going to talk more about what why I think it's really important not to look at your planning in a vacuum, and why you need to coordinate. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY has been broadcasting since 1995.
This is Mayor Ken Smith. Congratulations to WDIY for signing on the air.
We're with Commissioner Frank Donches of the Bethlehem Police Department.
We welcome Dr. John of the Blend today.
Bob Durow composed, conducted, and played much of the Schoolhouse Rock music.
Three is a magic number.
Stepping the antidote to violence is to speak up against it.
WDIY for 30 years.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it in. We're talking about the elements of financial planning, the importance of financial planning and coordinating, and that common theme that I have been really seeing recently is who is helping you coordinate the impact of one financial decision in one area of your life and one of these elements with another. If you're going to the accountant and they're not doing planning for you and they're just entering the information, you go to the attorney and you ask for estate documents and they prepare the estate documents, which you absolutely need, and I'm thrilled that you're doing it, and you have a will and a power of attorney and a healthcare power of attorney, and the attorney typically is asking questions about what are your assets, how are they titled. Sometimes they might say, what are your beneficiary designations, and they might get that information, but it doesn't mean they're necessarily confirming it or following up on changes that they may recommend. Who is doing that? That might be your responsibility, but you might not realize the impact of, following through on some of those directions if you even were given any of those directions. And over time, sometimes what I have seen is, and many attorneys see as well, is that someone might come in and finally get their documents prepared, because sometimes it's like pulling teeth to get people to get their estate documents done. They might go and do it, and then they never go back and update or revisit what they had. I have, sometimes you'll say to a client, when was the last time you updated your estate plan? Oh, it was 2009. Well, we're in 2025 now. So if you're listening and you have done your estate planning, number one, good job. At least you have something. And number two, when did you last do it? Because there are always updates and new things that are happening and new laws that require sometimes updates to your documents. And attorneys sometimes can just do a codicil, meaning like a little amendment to a will or an amendment to a trust, and or just rewrite the documents. So it's really important to revisit that. But again, it's you might not see the importance of the coordination. So that's kind of what I want to talk about tonight. What are those elements of financial planning and how you have to be in front of these decisions and understand how one decision impacts another? So let me mention those elements again, and then I'll give you an example that I just talked about yesterday. So cash flow, income taxes, retirement planning, risk management, investment management, and estate planning. So a colleague and I did a presentation yesterday for a group of people, and one of the examples was looking at the tax return. And I've talked about this on prior shows before. The tax return tells a story, and I love the story. I love the story of people. And the tax return can tell me how, quite often, not always everything. I have to sometimes ask some additional questions, but for the most part, I can really tell a lot. I might see a tax return that has a lot of interest income, which tells me that person might be a good saver and they might be very conservative. If they might not have very much in dividends, that might tell me again, they might not be as good of a saver, or they might just be so conservative they have it all in the bank. And that tells me a little bit about their investment style. It's also going to tell me a little bit about their income tax consequence, because the decisions they've made about their investment portfolio hit on their tax return and makes a difference on their tax return. So in my the little story I had yesterday, I had an example of really high interest income for someone. They had really high dividends as well, but the dividends mostly were what I'm going to call ordinary dividends. They weren't qualified. And what that means is that person probably had a lot of mutual funds. And the mutual funds, when you get the 1099, you get dividends. And you might think, oh, well, I have dividends. That's good. That has a better tax rate. I heard that from Lori. Dividends are really good. Well, not all dividends are created equal, meaning if there's mutual funds that throw off dividends, sometimes those mutual funds are also holding fixed income. And because it was in a mutual fund, it throws off a dividend, even though it's not from equities. So it doesn't qualify for a lower tax rate. And if I see a lot of ordinary dividends and not a lot of qualified dividends means equity exposure, more favorable tax rate, that tells me you're also still more conservative. It's in line with being pretty conservative. And that is telling me that you have higher taxes because of ordinary income on interest income and on those ordinary dividends, you would have exposure to ordinary income tax rates. So in this story, that's what this particular client had. This client also had Social Security that was getting 85% included in taxable income, and she had IRA distributions. So she was in required minimum distribution at the time. She had Social Security that was getting included 85%, and she had all this interest income and ordinary dividends, all subject to ordinary income tax rates. She itemized, but she was only getting the benefit of itemizing over what we would call the standard deduction by like $2,000. But she was charitably inclined and she was donating like $10,000, but she was only getting the benefit of that donation by about $2,000 because her standard deduction was so high. What I also noticed on the tax return is her income put her into the next threshold of Medicare. So if you are Medicare eligible at age 65 or disabled, if you are Medicare eligible and you're over certain income thresholds, then you may be subject to a higher Medicare premium. They call that the income-related monthly adjustment amount, the IRMA hit. IRMA. Are you subject to IRMA? And you are if you're over certain income limits. And she happened to be. All right. So what I'm looking at is this tax return. I have a pretty conservative investor. She saves a lot of money because she had pretty high interest income and pretty high dividends. She had a nice Social Security benefit, and she had a nice required minimum distribution, a nice IRA distribution on there, and she was charitably inclined. Well, regular listeners will know the next thing I'm going to say is, what about the qualified charitable distribution? And what I mean by that for new listeners is, once you reach age 70 and a half, you can make a qualified charitable distribution from your IRA and not pay tax on it. Now, most people don't have a required minimum distribution these days until either age 73 or even age 75 if you were born in 1960 or later. So you don't have a required, once you're born in 1960, we don't have to take out a required minimum distribution until age 75. All right. So, but once you're 70 and a half, you can take a distribution from an IRA and give it directly from the IRA to charity and not pay any income tax on it. So if I could suggest to this client, taxpayer, instead of doing $10,000 to charity out of your bank account, you could do $10,000 out of your IRA and lower the taxable amount of your required minimum distribution, I'm saving taxes almost on an additional $8,000. And we lowered the income enough that they were back to the standard Medicare threshold. Saved a lot of money. Okay? So it's cash flow, investments, retirement, and taxes. Cash flow, retirement, investments, and taxes. Four things, four elements of your financial life with just one decision. I love it. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY presents Lehigh Valley Hollywood Squares, a live game show experience like no other. Join your favorite local celebrities for a night of laughs, trivia, and high-energy fun, all to support the station you love. Tickets are on sale now. Don't miss this nostalgic interactive event that's perfect for all ages. Mark your calendar for October 28, 6 p.m. at the State Theater in Easton and help keep public radio strong. For details and tickets, visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I once had someone say to me about listening to the radio show, they say, well, you say the phone number a lot. And I have to say that I learned early on when I first started doing radio back in 2007, someone said people listen in snippets. So I have to say the radio or the phone number often because people may be coming in and out of listening. So that's why I do it. And I thank you for your patience in my announcing that so frequently. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Cindy and Bob and they'll bring it in for me. 610-758-8810, excuse me. So we're talking about the elements of your financial life, the elements of financial planning. I'm trying to demonstrate that you can't look at these elements in a vacuum. You can't just talk about your cash flow. You can't just talk about your taxes. You can't talk about your retirement. You need to talk about it in relation to everything else. Also, the other day, I was talking with someone and I gave them an analogy of a house, your roof for asset allocation, I think it was. So the roof is your overall portfolio. And then you have these different rooms in the house and we do different things in the room. So you might have a room that's the Roth IRA. You might have the room that's the IRA. You might have a room that is your regular investment account. You might have a room that is your cash. And as long as all of these rooms together meet your overall risk tolerance, that's how I explained asset allocation. And I think we can do the same thing when we talk about the elements of your financial life. The roof over your house is your financial life. There is not a day, I can almost promise you, there is not a day that we can go through without having some financial decision in that day, whether it's turning on the lights, turning up the air conditioning, buying the coffee, going out to eat, making a decision about a car, where do we direct deposit our paycheck? Are we funding a Roth IRA? There's decisions on a daily basis that are financial. That's our financial house. And the roof is these rooms, I'm going to say, that have each of these elements, just like when I was talking about asset allocation. We can have a room that's cash flow, a room that's taxes, a room that's retirement. And yes, you may have to look at just your retirement decisions. How much are you putting in your retirement account? What investment options are you selecting on the retirement account? Yes, that's a room, but how does that impact, inform, and support you in reaching your overall financial goals of your financial house, your financial life? Okay. So I'm trying to give some stories to demonstrate why it's so important not to just look at one piece of it. And then I'm going to, talk about some of the individual elements of that as well, of each of those. So I want to give another example. And I also talked about this yesterday at the presentation because it was at a church. And you can have someone who will say to their attorney, I want to take care of my church or my university, my favorite nonprofit 501c3 charity when I die, and I'm going to give them money in my will. And it might be a percentage, which is part of the residue, or it might be specific dollars. And you just feel so good about it. And you feel good about it. And maybe you told the church or the university about it. Everyone feels really good about it. And the attorney helped you do everything. But someone forgot to check how your assets were titled and how your beneficiary designations were named. Because I've had a number of circumstances where people think they're giving to charity through their will and their assets aren't aligned that way, because there's been a, you know, in recent years, there's all this kind of noise about making everything non-probate. People, oh, I want to avoid probate. I want to avoid probate. Well, you avoid probate by putting asset titling or beneficiary designations on that when you die, no assets go through your estate, which means no assets go through your will, which means those provisions you made in your will, they're not going to be fulfilled. And you need to understand that. So after you do your will or your trust, whatever it might be, you want to match it up with those beneficiary designations you did so you understand how the assets are going to flow. Because maybe you don't need it to go through the will if you have it as a named beneficiary. If you've named, you know, your children all the beneficiaries on all your accounts, but you gave $100,000 to the favorite charity in your will and no money is going through your will, then that charity's not going to get anything. Is that really what you wanted? And maybe it is. Maybe your goals changed, and that's fine. But you just have to make sure that it's going to go the way you think. Sometimes what happens too, people will do percentages, and there might be certain assets going through the will. So for example, quite often we will see beneficiary designations on life insurance. That's risk management. We will see, and that's estate planning. So already we've got two elements there. And we might see beneficiary designations on IRAs. And maybe there might be a circumstance where you said, you know, niece and nephew are going to get this IRA. I've got them getting 50-50, niece and nephew 50-50. But in my will, I'm going to give it to you know, my friend, my next door neighbor, and I'm going to give them 100% of my estate. Well, the estate might be just your house because everything else is, you know, named beneficiary. And that might be exactly what you wanted. Neighbor friend's going to get the house. That's going through the will. Niece and nephew are taken care of automatically. They don't have to worry about an executor paying them out like a year later. They're going to get the money directly when they're, you know, named as beneficiaries. And that could be just fine that way. But it might not go that way. Maybe you wanted the niece and nephew to get the house or get part of the house or, you know, so you just have to follow the threads. I'm all about following the threads and making sure that the numbers work out the way that you intended. The other piece that I always want to remind people about is that IRAs are income taxable. So if you have any charitable intent at all and you want to do it at your death, I often tell people, make sure you have enough for yourself during your lifetime. You know, I'm philanthropic during lifetime. I love when other people are philanthropic during lifetime. But there may be those circumstances where you may have to be more careful about the money that you're spending. So you might not want to be philanthropic while you're alive, but you want to do it when you pass away. And you can do that through beneficiary designations of an IRA. Rather than giving cash to the charity in your will, $100,000 of cash to the charity in your will, you could say, oh, I have a $100,000 IRA. I'm going to name the charity the beneficiary of the $100,000 IRA, and I want my niece and nephew to get the $100,000 cash. You see? So that, what is that? That's estate planning, that's tax planning, that's retirement planning, and it makes sure it's all working together. And, you know, you might think, well, Lori, this is common sense. This just makes sense. But you know what? Not everybody thinks about it. I mean, if I'm seeing it over and over, and, you know, I work with really sophisticated clients. I have sophisticated listeners, as I always say. It's sometimes the details are a little bit overwhelming, and those details change over time. your desires change, maybe your beneficiaries change, your asset value changes, your cash flow changes, you might have to pivot. So it's something you want to review fairly often and make sure you're doing it right. When I come back, I did have a question come in, so I'll answer that when we come back from this break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. We had if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or off air, as Robert sent in his question off air, which is a good question. We are talking about the elements of your financial life, financial planning, and this fits right in with that. The question was, is there a way to avoid probate with a house? Yes. There is a way to avoid probate with a house, and that means it's a title change. If you own, first of all, you can own, you can avoid probate if you're married and you own the home jointly, and one of you passes away. It avoids probate on the first to die because asset titling with spouses, it would automatically go to the surviving spouse. So it avoids probate on the first to die in that circumstance. There may be circumstances where you own a home jointly with a sibling or a parent, and that joint titling would also avoid probate. But I don't think that was the question. The question was, what if you're the last one holding the house and the title is in your name alone? How can you avoid probate? I'm not a lawyer, and I would recommend that you talk to a lawyer if this is something you were interested in doing, because there's kind of like a couple facets to this. One, people want to avoid probate because why? The probate fees, at least in Pennsylvania, are not very high. Probate in Florida is complicated. It can be lengthy and timely, or take a while. So certain states might have higher probate costs. I think Virginia used to have pretty high probate fees. So you want to understand, where is the property? Where is the home? Why do you want to avoid probate? Is it because of probate fees? It may not be a big deal. So maybe there's no reason to change anything. Do you want to avoid probate because you planned on giving your home to, let's pretend, a child anyway, and that child was going to continue to stay in the home, live in the home, move into the home, and you wanted to make that easier? What you'd want to factor in is, if you take, in order to avoid probate, you're taking it out of your name, so to speak, or putting some kind of designation on it. And if you do a transfer during life of this property, there may be transfer fees that, you know, you may not want to pay if there's a smarter or better way to do it. So you might have heard of something called a quit claim deed. You may talk to an attorney if you want to avoid probate, if it's appropriate for your circumstances. You may want to talk to an attorney about what that might look like for you. And I'm only talking from experience, because we have a home in Michigan and we want that home to stay in the family. We've asked our children, do you want this home to stay in the family? Yes, we do. So we actually set up a separate trust. Nothing's in the trust. But when we die, we've done a quit claim deed on that home in Michigan, and it's recorded at the courthouse. And if we die, it transfers automatically to this trust. Okay, so it's going to avoid probate, because at the first to die, we own it jointly. If I die, it goes to my husband. If my husband dies, it goes to me. If we both die, it automatically will go into this trust. So we don't have to look to the will to see who gets it. It's all been recorded. That's because we want to keep the house in the family, yet we will retain control during our lives. And the Michigan attorney said, in Michigan, it made sense for us to keep it in our names for whatever reasons. Okay, there was not a lot of fees. It was pretty, you know, very low cost to do that. So, Robert, the one of the reasons I caution people about the different facets is if the house is going to get sold anyway when someone passes away, like in the estate, so let's say the house stays in the estate, there are certain advantages, tax advantages, in my opinion, of keeping it in the estate for income tax purposes. So if you're living in the house right up until you die, then it would be included for inheritance tax purposes anyway, and you'd have an inheritance tax. But if it's in the estate and gets sold in the estate, then it becomes an asset that the executor has to manage. And it becomes, like, in essence, almost investment property. So if the executor has to sell the house to, you know, make the distributions to the beneficiaries, et cetera, and they have to manage that, it gets a step up in basis. So let's pretend you paid $30,000 for the house, and now, you know, 40 years later, it's $400,000. It gets a step up in basis to $400,000, and you could sell it, $400,000 sale price, cost basis $400,000, but there's selling cost, and if the selling cost are, you know, $45,000, I actually could get a $45,000 loss on that sale in the estate that I could then pass to the beneficiaries to use on their tax return. So, Robert, you have to kind of understand what's the goal for making something non-probate and understand all the facets of it. If, for example, someone transferred a home today to their child, which a lot of people were doing, if you don't do it right, your child could end up having your cost basis and have a big gain because maybe they don't live there. It's not their principal residence. You were trying to avoid inheritance tax to a child is 4.5%. But if you paid $30,000 for that same house, it's worth $400,000, and you had transferred it to your child during lifetime without the proper kind of thinking it through, and they sell it then after you die, that's their home and it's not their principal residence. It doesn't qualify for the exemption, the principal residence exclusion. So you could kind of snowball a bunch of, like, bad decisions in that circumstance. So you want to think through, again, threads, you want to think that through. What is the goal? What are the facets you have to think about? And what makes sense? Now, there are people who can transfer assets, like a home, to their children with certain retained rights, like we call that a life estate, and that life estate could help mitigate, you know, some of those complications I just mentioned. So that life estate could still get a step up in basis, all right? But and avoid probate, but could still be subject to inheritance tax. So if you're trying to do something, I would strongly suggest you work with an attorney, but that could impact a number of decisions as well. Okay, so thank you for that question. It's very interesting, but I like to make sure that clients understand, you know, all the different facets of it so that you plan accordingly and see if it makes sense for you. Okay, well, let's talk about, well, just a couple other stories I should tell you. For example, retirement planning. Sometimes people are still eligible for a pension, and many of those pension plans have converted to something like called a cash balance plan, where you actually would have the option to take that monthly pension or cash it out, take a lump sum amount. That lump sum amount is based on some, you know, actuarial values, life expectancies, you know, how long you worked there, and what time period and interest rates. So you might have to compare, what is this lump sum worth to me, or what is a monthly pension amount? So that's cash flow planning, that's tax planning, that's retirement planning, that's estate planning. Because what if you selected a single life option, you croak the next day, the present value of that future stream of money would have been, you know, $400,000. You decided to take the single life pension option because you didn't think your wife was going to need it or your husband was going to need it, and you got in a car accident the next day. Poof, it's gone. So you really want to understand pension options in that regard, that's just another little story. And then once you, if you were to elect pension, a monthly pension, that affects your cash flow, it affects your income tax, because you can't take that back then once you've elected that monthly pension amount. Whereas if you took a lump sum, you might be able to control the taxation of the withdrawals on the rollover of that lump sum to an IRA. All right. So let's talk about some of these elements of financial planning. I've getting over the stories. There's a million stories. So cash flow, I've say this all the time. People who think they don't have money usually do. And those who think and act like they have money sometimes don't, often don't. So be aware of who you are. So if you're someone who thinks you have money, reflect for a moment. Like, you spend like you have tons of money. Do you really? We have to remember that we're not always just planning for our daily needs today. We could be planning for our daily needs in 10 years. For example, we find out that, you know, one of the spouses elected the single life pension. You're living your life, living your dream with these big pensions, and all of a sudden the one who had the high pension passes away, and you didn't realize they chose a single life, and that stream of money is gone. Now where am I going to fund it? So you really want to understand your cash flow and pre-retirement and post-retirement and how that might look different. What kind of sources of income do you have on your cash flow? Pensions, Social Security. What are the survivor benefits, as I mentioned, whether it's a pension or Social Security? Some people live their lives on, if you're married, you have two spouses, maybe collecting Social Security. If one of you passes away, the lower benefit goes away. How is your cash flow going to be after that? Some people buy annuities. They like annuities. Well, they sometimes never annuitize them, and they just continue to grow and grow. What are the income tax consequences on something like an annuity if you decide to choose that? Is the income, cash flow that you've been relying on, is it investment income? Is it salary? You want to understand what kind of investment income are you getting? And as I mentioned earlier, is it ordinary income? Is it qualified dividends? Is it capital gains? What kind of savings do you have? Do you have your savings earning something for you, or do you have it in the bank because you just can't think about it and you get stressed out? So you have, you know, $150,000 cash sitting in a bank account earning 0.01%. Could you do something with that? That's going to help your future cash flow as well. Take a little bit of the extra stress off if you can get maybe 3%. The Fed just lowered interest rates 0.25%. We'll see that kind of flow through the rest of society, and you may not be getting the kinds of returns on those CDs or savings accounts or money markets that you were getting before. How is that going to impact your cash flow and your spending, etc.? Spending. How are you spending? Are you paying attention in your cash flow to your discretionary versus your non-discretionary expenses? If you need to pivot and change and kind of get better about savings, if you weren't paying attention, you realized, gosh, I might be in trouble in a few years. I just found out my spouse took the, you know, single life pension, or oh my gosh, what will this mean? Maybe I need to save a little bit more. And, you know, do that today. Look at that today. Income taxes, observations on income taxes. So many people get stressed out about their tax returns. I say embrace it. Love your tax return. Look at it as a puzzle. Treat it like a puzzle. Look at your tax return and say, what kind of income is on my return? How is it getting taxed? And can I affect this at all by some of the decisions I'm making? And does it make sense for my risk tolerance? Does it make sense for my cash flow? Does it just make sense from a tax standpoint? You want to understand how it hits all of those areas. Is it hitting on all cylinders? So income taxes, watch for that. We are at our last break. The show has gone way too fast for me. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY with Lori Siebert. The phone number is 610-758-8810. If you have questions, we're talking about the elements of your financial life. I'm going to hit on a few points on each of these elements. So I already did cash flow, taxes. Let me go back to that for a moment. Remember, you want to know, how is the income on your return getting taxed? Is it subject to ordinary tax rates? Is it subject to capital gains tax rates or qualified dividends, capital, long-term capital gains? Or could it be zero? Zero meaning Roth IRA distributions and or tax-free Social Security. What filing status do you have? What deductions might you have? What credits might be available to you? Remember, there's been some tax changes. The energy credits are going away. If you think you were going to do any energy improvements to your home, this might be the, you know, year to do it. Or you have, you know, if you want it, we're going to do it anyway. You might want to look to see if you could qualify for a little bit of those extra energy credits. They have raised the standard deduction. You might want to see if that's going to impact any of your decisions. They are giving you, if you're within a certain income limit, you may be eligible for an extra senior deduction if you're 65 or older. That could give you a little bit of flexibility in maybe doing IRA conversions to Roth, or it might let you get more income at, you know, a lower tax rate. So you want to see how that's going to impact your situation. The big thing is, if you could maybe convert a little bit more money from IRA to Roth with that extra deduction. But you have to factor in, if you do a conversion, is it now throwing your income too high to get the that extra deduction? So it's, you know, kind of a circular calculation. Let's talk about some of the things to pay attention to in retirement in that column, in that, in that vacuum. The retirement, automatic contributions to an employer plan, that affects income taxes, that affects cash flow, and that affects your retirement, and it affects investments. So all of these elements impact another. So you want to look and say, set it and forget it. Am I putting money away? That's a great way to do it. Are you getting the match at work? Again, seems like a basic, you know, common sense kind of question, but you have to ask yourself, am I getting the match at work if the employer provides a match? What employer benefits might be available to you if you retire? Certain people who've been at companies, you know, for decades, they may have retiree benefits. Not all companies do that anymore, but some do. And maybe you need to work just like an extra year to qualify, because sometimes it might have a employment requirement that you have to be there maybe 25 years, and maybe you were going to retire at 24 years. Well, could you stick it out for an extra year to get maybe retiree benefits? Sometimes those retiree benefits might be help with medical cost, or it could be continued life insurance, you know, whatever it might be. So you just want to make sure you understand what your retirement benefits might be. We have a call from Teresa in Topton. Hi, Teresa, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, how can I help you?
Well, I was just curious. I often hear you talk about an IRA conversion to a Roth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, what's the benefit and how do you get it done?
Okay, I love it. I love the question. Cool. So the idea of converting IRA money to a Roth comes from when we're working. We may have been eligible to make a deductible IRA, which gives us a tax benefit today, or we were doing it through work, we were doing employer contributions, and maybe we have an old 401k that we roll over to an IRA. Mm-hmm. And some employers actually offer IRA conversions to Roth within an employer plan. But the basic concept is, usually people, the concept was defer, defer, defer. And what I mean is defer taxes. And how do we defer taxes? We take a pre-tax contribution into any of these retirement accounts. Then we are getting a tax benefit today. It didn't cost us like a dollar for dollar to get that money in the retirement accounts. And then hopefully those retirement accounts are growing. Because we usually anticipate in retirement that we're going to be in a lower tax bracket. But Teresa, sometimes we're not in a lower tax bracket anymore. Because back in the day with that whole defer, defer, defer concept, Social Security wasn't taxed. You know, people didn't have such maybe investment allocations where they were getting these great returns. The, you know, portfolios are getting really big. So sometimes what we find is people are in a higher tax bracket in their retirement years. So I would say you want to think about doing conversions when you think you're going to be in a lower tax bracket today than you will be in the future. Now, that applies overall, but I also tell people sometimes it's actually planning for a surviving spouse as well. So if I'm married and I'm in a, 22% bracket now and I retire and I'm in a 12% bracket, that's great. But then when my spouse or I die, now I have a single filing status and they're taking out required minimum distributions on the whole kit and caboodle. Sometimes I'm planning for tax rates for a survivor, okay? So now we have to say, am I in a lower tax bracket today than I might be in the future? And where I really see that opportunity, Teresa, is when someone retires and maybe they haven't started collecting Social Security yet. Okay. So your salary's off your tax return. You haven't started collecting Social Security because you have some savings in your bank account that's going to help fund your cash flow. Maybe you have a small pension. What else might you have? Maybe you have some investment income, that you're funding your cash flow with. Okay. All right. So your income's low on in these years before collecting Social Security, and you could convert, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. You can convert whatever amount you want. And maybe it's even before you're collecting Medicare or, on Medicare. So sometimes there's these windows where someone's retired before they're collecting Social Security. And why do I keep saying that? I keep saying that because, Teresa, if you start collecting Social Security, and let's pretend your Social Security is $24,000, and that with your cash in the bank is enough for you to live on, well, your tax return might not tax any of your Social Security because that's the only income on your return. $1,000 of interest and $24,000 of Social Security, none of that's taxable. But if I now throw on a $50,000 conversion, now 85% of your Social Security is included. So now I've inadvertently added way more income on your tax return than you're actually getting in your pocket. So that's why I look for that window of when is a good time to convert. Now, even though someone has already started collecting Social Security, there could be times where we still could have room to convert. And that might be if you have enough other income on your return that 85% of your Social Security is already included. So it's already included. So if I add more income, it's not going to change that. But maybe I'm playing a 22% tax bracket because I know in 5 years I'm going to get an inheritance. I'm inheriting mom and dad's IRA. And guess what? I have to take mom and dad's IRA out in 10 years. And when I start throwing those distributions on my tax return at age 60 or age 65, I'm going to be in a really high tax bracket because we're going to see a huge shift in, all of these people who are going to be passing away and, kids are inheriting it at age 55, 65. Sometimes you're going to be in a high tax bracket because you're still working. And now we have to take out these IRAs. So anyway, you kind of want to watch for some of those windows. Is that making sense? You want to look to convert in a year where you're in a low tax bracket. But I will add that if you're eligible to do a Roth and you're working, because you have to have earned income to put money in a Roth, if you're working, you have earnings, and your income is low enough to put money into a Roth, you should at least be doing that. You don't even need to convert for that. You can put money into a Roth even if you're putting money into your 401k at work. They're separate.
I got the impression that if you put money into your IRA, your $7,500, that you couldn't put any more money into a Roth.
If you're putting money into a traditional IRA and getting that deduction, you're correct. You cannot do both. It's one or the other. So if you need the tax break, then you do the traditional IRA. And Teresa, let's say we do that for 5 years because you're going to retire in year six. Then I might say, hey, Teresa, you're going to have enough money in year six to live on that you're not going to need to take any money out of an IRA. You're not going to need to take any money out of, you know, some taxable account. You could go ahead and take advantage of that deferral for the next 5 years. And then in year six, we'll convert maybe $50,000 or whatever.
Okay.
But it's one or the other. So if you're in a low tax bracket today, I particularly tell people who are like in, you know, young, I say you're in your lowest earning years right now. Roth. Typically young people are in their lowest earning years. But yeah, so if you can fund a Roth when you're in a low tax bracket, I would do that. But if you need the deduction, go ahead and do the traditional, get the deduction, but then you could convert it later when you're in that little sweet spot.
Okay.
Makes sense? Okay.
Yeah.
Great question. Thank you for thinking of it and being in front of your decisions. So have a good night.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye. So there, you know, and then I want to remind people that the Roth IRA can grow income tax free, you know, if you don't take it out until it's like a qualified distribution, which is longer of age 59 and a half or 5 years, but you can always take out your original contributions. But the Roth is growing tax free. So what do we want it to do in that very purposeful sentence? The Roth can grow income tax-free. So we really would like the Roth typically to grow. So when you talk about the roof of your asset allocation and there's different rooms, that's where your overall asset allocation should certainly meet or be allocated within your risk tolerance to equities and or fixed income. But you can be smart about where you're putting the growth. All right. So retirement, we've talked about that, Social Security, choosing when to collect Social Security, et cetera. Risk management, we spend a lot of time on insuring risks. And I always say, you know, my concept is if you insure it, nothing happens. So you're actually paying to insure that nothing happens, because doesn't it always seem that when you get insurance, nothing happens? It's when you don't have insurance that stuff happens. So, you know, it's just one of those funny things. But you want to pay attention to your pre-retirement needs, to your survivor needs, property and casualty, you know, check with your insurance agent what is covered. What if, you know, have you made sure you have either flood insurance, if that's, you know, if you're prone, your area is prone to that, or sinkhole insurance? Do you have your valuables insured? Do you have jewelry or instruments or artwork? Make sure you have that covered. Do you have an umbrella policy? Are you someone who would need disability, long-term care? Talk to your insurance agents about those, because that also affects your cash flow, obviously, and even risk management, estate planning. Investment management, understanding diversification is more important than what you invest in, but you need to understand what diversification means, and understand your risk tolerance, understand fees, understand the geography of your investments. Estate planning, again, the most ignored element of your financial life. Please don't be afraid of it. Unfortunately, this is all going to happen to us. So estate planning, I say, is not just about when you die. It's about how you live out those final years. And are you going to be ready for it? Are you going to have enough money to be comfortable? So think of estate planning as preserving your estate for yourself. Don't think about it as estate planning for when I die. Think about estate planning. It's all taken care of. You know, are you going to be set with what you have as well? Get your documents done, review your beneficiary designations, review your titling. Even people who are really great at reviewing that stuff, they forget when they open up a new account to do it. And, you know, they might open up a new account because they chased a new interest rate or something like that. Their spouse wasn't with them, so they didn't do a joint account. So be aware of that. But build in flexibility in your planning. It could mean working longer. It could be cutting expenses, maximizing your retirement benefits, but just making sure that you're coordinating everything. The show, I've had a blast tonight. Thank you for the callers. I appreciate it. Thank you, Bob and Cindy. Thank you, Bridger. Next week, we have end-of-year market observations with Bill Henderson. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.